afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, July 12th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us today, but first, we're going to do the market report today. And yes, I am on a new computer, so we'll just have to make sure that I have all my pages where they need to be. So let's start with the...
So you say.
So I say, until the little computer gremlins come on here and decide to do something a little bit different than I care them to do. Anyway, gold today was up 370. 370 for gold today, and the New York spot price at 1221.90. Again, up 370. We had a stronger early open for gold. It was 1226 for the high, and now she's settling just about at 1222. Silver's up 8 cents today at 1601. Platinum was up 15, 922, actually beating out palladium. Palladium was up 12 at $868. The USDX today was down 0.03 at 95.73. Crude oil was up 44 cents at 45.48. Paper markets today, we have the Dow up 122 points. Of course, this is all after Janet Yellen came out and spoke and gave her statements, and we'll review that after the first break today, after the segment with Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs. So the Dow responded with 122 points to the positive at 21,531. The NASDAQ was up 67 points at 62.61. The S&P was up 17 at 24.43. 10-year yield, 2.33%, down 0.4. The euro fell, too, today, down 0.41 at 1.14. European markets, of course, they responded. You know, they were up strong, so it didn't have any... Janet Yellen's discussion didn't have anything to do with their stronger performance overnight. But again, we'll talk all about Janet Yellen and the possible replacement for her come, I believe, January of 2018. But first, we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us this afternoon. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about inflamed livers today. You probably know of the term under the name hepatitis.
Yep.
Because we're seeing a lot of hepatitis ads on the TV. You know, medicine is like telling people, you know, get out there and get your hepatitis vaccine. And a lot of people don't realize hepatitis is really inflammation of the liver, and a lot of things can cause that. It doesn't have to be the so-called hepatitis virus. It could be alcohol or tobacco. So young adults are actually being pressured to protect their livers now by getting the hepatitis virus vaccine. And science says there's three different strains of hepatitis. There's A, B, and C. We're told that strain C is the most life-threatening. So the CDC says about 3 million Americans have hepatitis C. So we're going to take a closer look at this and the recommended treatments. So according to our odds and vactruth.com, about 113 people recently contracted inflammation of the liver hepatitis from eating blueberries. But they also stated 435 individuals died from reactions after they got the hepatitis vaccine. So 113 versus 435. So according to the U.S. National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, hepatitis B vaccines have been known to cause systemic lupus. And a new study is reporting that male infants have a triple risk of getting autism from the hepatitis vaccine. So hepatitis C is usually contracted through direct contact from contaminated blood. So unless you're sharing needles or have unprotected sex or getting blood transfusions, your risk is really, really low from getting hepatitis C. So What's really interesting is I came across some research that Dr. Joseph McCullough was discussing, and he states he's challenging authorities in science regarding hepatitis C. He says there's little scientific evidence that there is such a viral epidemic, including hepatitis C. So he says it's not real. So according to him, in 1987, science was trying to link liver inflammation to a specific virus, but they weren't able to isolate this virus and identify it. He says, additionally, no one actually has been able to grow or culture the hepatitis viral C in the lab. So with that said, he says, what are the manufacturers using in that hepatitis C vaccine? They're not been able to isolate, culture, or purify a viral cell. So what's in the vaccine? Isn't that interesting?
Real interesting. Sounds what's in the vaccine is advertising. They're selling something, or maybe snake oil. Maybe that's what they use for the vaccine.
Well, according to Dr. McCullough, quote, he says, no one's ever been able to document according to basic long-held scientific standards of virology that substance which they're proposing causes infectious hepatitis C virus. So according to Dr. McCullough, scientists, what they did is they infected monkeys with blood from humans who had inflamed livers. And then they dug around in the monkey organs for some piece of genetic information they hoped would be a virus. And since they had no basic evidence what identified this hepatitis virus, and to compare those genetic markers, he says they were pretty much digging in the dark. So long and short of that hepatitis research, science made assumptions and without evidence-based data. And the CDC reports hepatitis C virus is created with a genome they thought was a hepatitis virus and cloned it. So they have no real scientific hard data. That's what it is. So what they actually did, though, according to McCullough, is they created a vaccine to make the immune system attack that genetic information normally found in humans, which is causing a new epidemic of autoimmune disease. So instead of creating
they are attacking something that is normally found in humans that they only suspect is hepatitis C? I mean, if it's normally found, maybe it's normal.
Well, what he says is that with regard to this hepatitis C vaccine, the scientists conducted a lot of research in 97. It was supposed to be detailed on the hepatitis virus, but he says what it really was human cells with RNA and DNA in it. It wasn't really a virus at all.
Oh, my God.
So any vaccine using this data, he says, on this cell line will be a vaccine against human cells. And Dr. Richard Stroman, he's a molecule biologist at the University of California, he thinks that the current decline in hepatitis C is not due to hepatitis vaccines at all, but it's due to better blood screening that's eliminated the HIV donors. So Dr. McCullough is presenting this challenge that hepatitis C is not real. It's not a real virus. It doesn't really actually exist. So he says hepatitis patients, do they really have hepatitis virus? According to a 1992 study, he says it answered that question. The New England Journal of Medicine, he said, volume 327, page 1906, noticed that people who were diagnosed with hepatitis C had some association with the non-A, non-B hepatitis cases, and they lived just as long as people without any hepatitis virus. So he says hepatitis viruses overall don't reduce survival rates. Isn't that interesting?
The whole thing is, I mean, it's worse than sometimes you can imagine. They're just selling stuff to sell stuff, and they're telling you that there's a problem, and maybe there's not even a problem.
Right. Well, according to Dr. Stroman, the molecule biologist, he says toxic hits from smoking and alcohol can traumatize the liver to cause genetic instability in its cells that can inflame it. Therefore, not all hepatitis diagnosis is really viral. So, you know, they're off on this, apparently. You know, it's and then we come to this really interesting case about the whistleblowers, Melanie and Al. According to the Alliance for Human Research Protection, in 2010, there was this pair of virologists that were working for Merck Pharmaceuticals, and they filed a lawsuit against Merck for faking the efficiency test of the MMR, that's the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine. According to virologists Stefan Rayling and Joan Walowski, they alleged Merck filed fake documents about the vaccine. And so Dr. Anthony Morris, actually former chief virologist of the FDA and their vaccine program, he told us there was a bunch of fraud in the vaccine industry in 1976, but people didn't want to believe it. So Dr. Stephen Crawling and Joan Walowski, these were the virologists that came forward. They're the whistleblowers. They said, fraud in vaccine testing encapsulates how medical research can be manipulated to achieve desired results and why it is wise to question the integrity and validity of science-based medicine. End of quote. This is scary.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's bad enough when they're just trying to make a fat profit.
Yeah. Right?
But this is worse.
I know,
this isn't just trying to profit from healing a legitimate disease. This implies alleging that diseases exist that aren't even there and then selling product to solve them.
Well, the thing is what McCullough was putting forth is when they're using cell DNA as the cell line, natural, normal cells that you find in humans, and you make a vaccine to attack that, you're creating a new form of disease to treat. So you're causing autoimmune disease with that.
I mean, that's genocide. That's criminal.
That is.
That's not just a mistake. That's not just something that can be excused as a mistake.
Right.
People should go to jail.
Oh, yeah. Well, with regard to the allegations from these two virologists that worked for Merck on the MMR vaccine, they actually said that they looked back at previous research on the vaccines, and they said the deception goes well past the 90s, the 1990s. So this isn't anything new. And this is what Dr. Morris was trying to warn people during the swine flu pandemic. He says it was fake. It's not real. So the whistleblower doctors were actually threatened with jail if they reported the fabricated discrepancies to authorities. So the virologist stated the MMR vaccine is known to cause meningitis, the inflamed brain tissue. This is what parents have been saying about their kids being damaged for years.
Yeah.
Okay, so Merck's attorneys tried to hide behind the FDA's laws that approved the drug, trying to, you know, trump those federal laws like the Sherman Act, but the judge didn't go with it. So now the Federal False Claim Act is really a statute that allows whistleblowers to come forward with their claims in the name of the government. Now, the public may not be aware, the U.S. government is the largest purchaser of Merck's vaccine stock by 50%. And you would think that when this case came forward that the federal government would have joined the lawsuit because they had been defrauded by decades, but they declined. And here's another important tidbit. Drug companies will lobby governments to mandate vaccines even when the disease is no longer a serious threat. Here's a quote from the CDC from June 8, 2015. They say the U.S. CDC notes that mumps is no longer a common disease in the United States due to, in 2014, there were 1,151 reported cases, but by 2015, there were only 438 reported cases. But children are still required to get a vaccine for the mumps. Right?
I hear you.
Well, okay, so what do you suppose the hepatitis symptoms are? Well, here are your basic symptoms of an inflamed liver. You may have some muscle aches. You may have fever, loss of appetite, some abdominal pain, and you may just have this general feeling of sickness. Now, here are the symptoms you get after you receive the hepatitis vaccine. You have fever, headache, flu-like symptoms, dizziness, feeling tired, nausea and vomiting, stomach pain, diarrhea, loss of appetite, joint pain, sore throat, runny nose, irritability, and of course swelling, redness, and a hard lump at the injection site. So, you know, according to Mercola, he says this hepatitis vaccine stuff, he says it's a way to keep marketing science. It's to keep the academic enterprise going. It keeps labs and businesses and researchers in business. It's not real science. He says they're generating epidemics. It is really the new reality within the scientific mechanism. Here's a quote from him. He says, this is not science when you generate a basis of an epidemic and nowhere have you properly isolated the virus, showing it to be effective or to the cause of the disease. Taking genetic information and presuming it to be the virus is making mockery of the scientific method and puts patients' health at risk. Wow.
It's mind-blowing.
It is. I mean,
it's so disturbing. It's so disturbing.
Well, and here's something that's really interesting. Dr. Robert Califf, he's the former FDA chief. He says this. He says the concept of safety is much more complex than most people think about until they look into it deeply. It's a big mistake to think that you can judge and balance the balance of risk and benefit from a small amount of data. All drugs have risk, and none of them are absolutely safe. End of quote. Okay, so this former chief now is stating plainly that a small test group will produce data that's too small and is not enough to judge the safety and effectiveness of drugs.
You know what else that means?
Mm-hmm.
It means if I was a drug manufacturer, I could set up tests with 50 or 100 of these small groups, knowing that there'd be different results from all of them, and then I could pick the group that gave me the best results and ignore the other 99.
Typically, that tends to happen, but a lot of the times they don't even bother to do that, go into that much detail. They just use small groups to test, and they test for very little time, you know, not even a month, you know. So the more that's revealed, with the more difficult it is, I think, for patients to be able to trust this supposedly science evidence medicine, because you always want to research the treatments recommended to you and determine if the treatments are going to strengthen or weaken you or put you at any known risk. And, you know, weakness leads to failure and more serious health complications. And, I mean, if you want to rely on a truthful source, you can just crack open your Bible, because God says all good things come from Him. So if drugs offer side effects and risk, how is that good?
A little bit of poison. That's what they're telling you. The question is not, you know, what is the drug, but what is the dose? A little bit of some things may not hurt you. A lot of some things will kill you. Same thing. How much are you taking? It's not so much, you know, what is the product, what is the dosage? That's where the poison
levels. And what we covered the other week was doctors that were looking into vaccines because they were never taught anything about them, and mm-hmm. there's no testing for different age groups. You know, so it's like, there's no test for pediatrics or geriatrics or anybody in between.
And I'll bet there are little or no funding. People want to test vaccines outside of the FDA.
Crazy. It is.
The whole thing is bizarre. Just to give us a little contact information, Wendy.
Sure. We're having a big sale, too. It's we have a mystery discount coupon sale, so you can check it out and ask about it if you're calling in for a catalog. The number is 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com is the web address if you want to check us out there. Always glad to be with you guys.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. Look forward to talking to you again next week. Fascinating information, disturbing information. Somebody's got to do something about this. That's Wendy Wilson from ThePowerHerbs.com, 866-229-3663. Protect yourself. Give Wendy a call. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
There's no turning back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisker with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. All your gold and silver coin needs.
We have a nice little silver package today. We have 20 1-ounce American Silver Eagles. The year on these is 2017. We have 20 1-ounce Buffalo Silver Rounds. And we have $20 face value of 90% quarters. That gives you 80 quarters, 80 coins, and the total package, it includes your shipping costs, $990. Quite a bit of savings. I offered this a couple of weeks ago, perhaps just last week, and the price was $1,015. So a nice little savings with the drop we've seen in gold and silver, and particularly the silver package, 21-ounce American Silver Eagles, dated 2017, so the brand new ones, 20 of the 1-ounce Buffalo Silver Rounds, and $20 face value of 90% silver. Includes your shipping costs, $990. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. And I told folks last week we had an article about the housing crisis that we face. And there isn't much that government at the federal level can do. The city and states.
They can make it worse. They can always make it worse.
They've already done all the bonuses that they can do to generate people buying homes. That there's so much regulations at the city and state levels that's unlikely to change. So it's a different type of a crisis that this country faces in the housing market. And I tried to get that in this week's news letter, but we had problems loading it and putting it in there. So we'll try it again and make sure you sign up for the newsletter, and we'll try to get it in on this coming Monday's newsletter. So yes, we talked about record highs today after Federal Reserve Board Chairwoman Janet Yellen said that the bank would soon start unloading part of the $4.5 trillion in securities it purchased during the financial crisis. This really isn't exactly news. They've been talking about this again for the past, 6-8 months. So it's kind of surprising to see how the stocks responded so positive to her remarks. But then again, I guess it was something better than having to listen to, did the Russians do it? And is there collusion in the White House and everything with that fiasco that's going on? So maybe the market did just like some fresh news and some optimism. We do have earnings coming out at the end of the week. If I think Pepsi Cola reported, it was so-so. You have a couple of banks that report later on in the week, and everyone is anticipating some higher earnings, although they don't expect the second quarter to be as good as the first quarter. But then you also have to look at the drop in the dollar. We've seen some easing in the dollar's value, and of course that'll make their earnings a little bit better, just as that stronger dollar that we've seen over the past couple of years certainly have hurt their earnings. So, there's a little bit of play in everything. There's a little bit of an illusion created with everything. So, again, with her being, her testimony to lawmakers, she said that they're going to gradually reduce and securities holdings starting later this year. And it's going to maintain a larger balance sheet than it did before the financial crisis. So,
which means they're going to carry more. They're not going to sell all of these debt instruments off.
No, they're not.
They're not going back down. And that, I don't doubt this for a minute. In fact, I doubt that they will sell much of anything. They may faint in the sense that they will try to create the illusion that there's still a market for these bonds. But they bought these bonds, $4.5 trillion or thereabouts, during the Great Recession in order to stimulate the economy. All right, and keep the prevent the economy from going into a collapse. And it's like inflating a balloon, an analogy I used in a recent article I wrote on the same subject. And they essentially inflated the economy by buying bonds that were government bonds. And the reason they bought the government, why did they buy the government bonds? Because no one else would. That was the problem. I remember seeing a report on a government auction back, early on in the, relatively early on in the Great Recession, they came up to sell their bonds, and no one would buy them at near face value, right? And they shut the auction down immediately rather than continue and generate proof that the market, the free market, thought the value, that the government bonds were worth, who knows, 80% of face value, 70%, maybe less. But it would trigger, if they admitted that the bonds were not worth nearly face value, it would be an admission that the bonds that are memorializing the $20 trillion national debt aren't worth full face value. It could have precipitated a panic sale of bonds around the world. No telling how far the price could have fallen. They couldn't sell the bonds to private investors because they were waking up to the fact that the government couldn't possibly pay the debt, that it, the debts that it owed. They couldn't sell it to private. And so the Federal Reserve, in my opinion, that's why the Federal Reserve stopped in as the buyer, the bond buyer of last resort. And they not only bought bonds, they bought them for more or less. They got close to full face value. Some discount that's inherent in the bonding, the bond business, but they didn't discount by 10% or 20% or whatever the free market might have done. They kept it fairly close and restored confidence that these pieces of paper, if they had a bond that said $100,000 on it, it was still worth $199,000, or it was still worth $99,000, whatever. It was still worth close to the full face value. They maintained that illusion. But the truth is, the bonds weren't worth what they paid for them, not in the free market. And now Yellen wants to sell their bonds. Well, who is going to buy them besides the free market? Will the central banks of Europe and Japan buy American bonds that are being sold off by the central bank of the United States? Not impossible, but I don't think so. If these bonds are presented to the free market and they essentially say, would you please pay full price for these bonds in order to maintain the illusion that they still have real value, I don't think it's going to succeed. As soon as they start selling these bonds, there is at least the risk that private investors will say, I'm not paying X number of dollars for this government bond. I'm not going to pay nearly full price. I'm going to pay, I might buy it for 80%. All right, I might do that. I might go for 70%. I don't know, but I'm not going for 95 or 98. I'm going to do that. As soon as they do that, it's not just the ones they're trying to sell. It will be an all U.S. bonds, including the 20 memorialized, and they will all be seen to be worth less than is commonly supposed, and it means that people holding these bonds are going to lose their assets, or at least part of them. All right. So in any case, what I've been saying for a couple of weeks now is I find it very improbable that the Federal Reserve, they say, oh, we're going to sell off some of our bonds. They've even got a plan to boost up where they're going to start up relatively slow and move up to where they're selling $50 billion worth of bonds every month. Well, $50 billion worth of bonds, if you've got $4.5 trillion bonds to sell, that's 90 months, 7.5 years to sell these off. All by itself, that's their plan. That's their supposed plan, which means they're not going to sell these things too fast. They don't want to destroy the market. And the reason they're not selling very fast, in my opinion, is there's at least a chance that they will fix these auctions where a couple of big banks one way or another, will be subsidized by the Federal Reserve to buy the bonds like shills at a poker game or a craps game or whatever. They will be there to create the illusion that the bonds are still worth basically full price. They'll buy them at full price, even though they're not worth that. Maybe. I don't know if I'm making that sense, but I'm saying I just don't think they can sell this into the market. And they use these bonds by buying these bonds during the Great Recession. They took the bonds at an excessive price. They overpaid, and they put that currency into the markets, which supported the stock market, among other things. Right? It was to stimulate the economy. If they're going to start selling these bonds, they're going to take currency out of the markets. They're going to take currency out of the economy. What's that going to do? It's going to slow the economy. I mean, they used it. They bought the bonds to speed up the economy. It just stands to reason that when they sell the bonds, it's going to slow the economy. I don't think they can sell their $4.5 trillion worth of bonds. Not over a period of 90 months. I think what they have, they call them bonds, U.S. bonds right now, I think they're toxic assets. I think they understand they're not worth the price. They're not worth near full face value. They're worth only a fraction of the value that people expect at the moment and presume at the moment. And if they produce evidence of that, the house of cards is going to start to collapse.
Well, when that value declines, you have your rates that rise. Your yields rise. And when your yields are rising, yeah, that will put that'll slow the economy like you ain't seeing anything. We've had a lousy, three rate increases of quarter points?
Yep.
And already we're seeing pressures on autos. We're seeing the pressure on the big ticket items because people can't afford the bigger payments.
I understand that.
People's wages aren't rising. So again, they can't do it. And when Mr. Trump had placed Quarles as the overseer of the Federal Reserve, I saw today that they're looking to lower the stress requirements of the big banks, well, Wall Street banks, so that's so that they can go in there and do what they're famous for doing, stealing and making a lot of money for themselves.
I am trying.
So again, it is, and I agree with you. I do think, with eliminating these stress tests, that means they don't need to carry, they don't need to, to carry enough reserves or as large a reserves as what they're indicating they need to carry now to make sure that they don't fail in the future. Well, they're going to fail because you remove the requirements, and yeah, they'll be going in there. Your Bank of America, because they're already, they still have those toxic assets of the mortgages on their books.
And that's what they mean when they say toxic assets. They mean we have bought these mortgages basically at full price, but they're not worth that. We call them toxic assets, but it means they're not worth what the price we paid for them was.
And you can't tell me now, because we have Mr. Trump. I do believe he will replace Janet Yellen. Because I do believe by the end of her term, things will be in a little more turmoil than what they are today. And I do believe there's an article by Reuters who sees Trump replacing Yellen with his National Economic Council director, Gary Cohen. He is the leading candidate to succeed her. And it all makes sense now. Gary Cohen's in there being the National Economic Council director, finding out everything that he's going to need to do when he gets to be into the Federal Reserve chair. He's a Democrat. He's a former Goldman Sachs president. So he's the perfect guy to take Janet Yellen's
take over the racket.
Absolutely.
He's the new Don. He's the new Federal Reserve Don.
So he's in there getting his experience that he needs, to take over her place. So that's exactly what's going to happen. So, again, it's all based on not a very good future.
We're caught in a trap. We're caught between the rock and the hard place. They can't just sell this stuff off. They can't sell it. I guarantee they will not. They've got what they say are $4.5 trillion worth of bonds on their books, and they're going to try to sell some of those bonds off. I don't know.
I don't think she's going to sell. If it turns out that the bonds are only worth,
and just pull a number out of the hat. I'm just hypothecating or hypothesizing. I'm not saying this is what would happen, but let's suppose they tried to sell just some of those $4.5 trillion worth of bonds, and they could only get 80% for what they tried to sell. It would mean that they had lost 20% on the whole $4.5 trillion in bonds.
Where do you think those rates would be?
And it would mean
that
20% everybody's holding a bond in a pension fund. You got $1 million worth of bonds in your pension fund. All of a sudden, no, you don't. You got 800,000. I mean, they can't touch this stuff. This is like kryptonite. Right? They need to bury it. They've got to take these bonds and like the other toxic assets and bury them in a nuclear waste dump. Go down into the salt mines, 1,000 feet deep in the ground, 5,000 feet, wherever you go with the radioactive waste, that's where you need to bury these bonds because they can't admit they're worthless or they can't admit that they've been seriously discounted because if they do, they'll precipitate a problem throughout the world. People are holding U.S. bonds all over. Oh, safe haven. So what are they going to do? They're caught. Now the Federal Reserve has $4.5 trillion. This is like me claiming to have $4.5 trillion stuck under my mattress. No, I don't have it. I don't really have that. What does that do to my credit rating? What does it do to my credibility? I mean, once you've made these bizarre claims, then you say, well, actually, we don't have that much. And it's not just them, like I say. What's the national debt worth if the bonds are devalued by 20%?
The only product that's poised to go higher is gold and silver. Mm-hmm. That's the only product, any investment product out there that is positioned to take advantage of no matter what happens in the future. Hey, if the economy, hey, if Trump pulls it off and we, you know, put trillions of dollars into our infrastructure, what do you think that's going to do to inflation? Gold's going to take off. Our dollar tanks, you know, with everything that we talk about, what the Federal Reserve wants to do, but we know they can't do. And we do know that, you know, you're not going to be able to turn it. Gold is still positioned to do well, extremely well, as the only thing out there that you can own that's going to protect your purchasing power. The only thing.
There are some people who think that they can get protection out of cryptocurrencies. And we'll show you why. We're going to take a break here in a couple of minutes or a few seconds. And when we return, we will show you why, examples of why the Bitcoin and the other cryptocurrencies are not anywhere near as safe as some people like to suppose. So we're going to take a break. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And if you will stay tuned, and I will tap dance for just one or two more seconds, have that break, and we'll be right back.
Would you take me back to school? I need to learn the golden rule. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Told you we'd talk a little bit about cryptocurrency in general. Bitcoin probably will be the subject of most of our conversation here. Here's a headline from the Miami Herald. Mt. Gox CEO denies embezzling millions of dollars of bitcoins. This guy was, Mt. Gox went down in 2014. It seems like it was a lot more recent than that. But he's the man running Mt. Gox. He pleaded not guilty Tuesday to charges of embezzlement and data manipulation. He says, I'm innocent of all the charges. I did not in any way dishonestly manipulate data or misuse the customer's money. And his business, Mt. Gox, which was operating out of Japan and at the time was the biggest Bitcoin exchange entity, if I understand correctly, when it shut down in February 2014, saying it had gone bankrupt after losing about 850,000 bitcoins, possibly to hackers. Okay? Now, 850 bitcoins right now, I don't know, you're talking, what's that number? 850,000 bitcoins, excuse me, are currently today somewhere in the neighborhood of $2,500 per coin. This is big bucks. This is several, and I have the number. I know I did before I got done here. Yeah, worth about $2 billion today. Now, the guy who was running the operation, again, he said he was Bitcoin. He was bankrupt because he lost about 850,000 bitcoins. After speaking at the hearing, this is the Mt. Gox CEO, a guy named Carpels something. He said he was not guilty. He was still analyzing the data, trying to track down the missing bitcoins. This reminds me of Bill Clinton after Vince Foster was showed up dead. They assured us that we will never rest until we find, but we're never going to find the guy who killed Vince Foster. We're not going to find whoever stole. If we haven't found these 850,000 bitcoins in the first 3 years after they disappeared, we aren't going to find them. And if we haven't found the guy who responsible for taking the bitcoins, we're not going to find him. Now, the guy running the program, he says, gee, it wasn't me. I'm innocent on this. I'm still looking. I'm as mystified as the rest. I'm as mystified as the rest of you. And where could our bitcoins be? I'm sitting back and thinking to myself, if it's that easy to make 850,000 bitcoins disappear, where they can't be found after most of 3 years, and nobody even knows who stole them, supposedly, do you want to invest in the Bitcoin? Do you want to get into cryptocurrencies? If they can be made to vanish as if it was a David Copperfield was running the program instead of some guy by the name of Carpelles or whatever. The main cause of the bankruptcy was hacking of Bitcoins by outsiders. That's from the guy who is in prison or in the court right now being charged. As the person responsible for Mt. Gox, I must recover the stolen bitcoins. To do so, I must figure out how they leaked out and where they went. If you don't know after 3 years, you aren't going to figure it out. This is going to go right down there with Judge Crater. Guy disappeared in the 30s or whenever. They're still looking for him. Nobody knows what happened. If found guilty of embezzlement, Carpelles could face up to 5 years in prison or a fine of up to 500,000 yen, which is $4,000. All right? Now, if he can beat the prison sentence, he's only got to pay a fine of $4,000 for having lost about $2 billion current value of bitcoins. And you got to sit back there and ask yourself, would you risk paying a $4,000 fine and spending up to 5 years in prison if you thought you could come out with $2 billion squirreled away someplace and you could get at it? Is that worth $1 billion for 5 years in prison? And that's the maximum. What if he only gets 6 months or a year? And what if he gets in? What if he's put out on some kind of probation, parole, whatever? What I'm trying to get to is that the Bitcoin business has been so incredibly lucrative. This cryptocurrency business, not just Bitcoin, but cryptocurrencies in general, that it has undoubtedly attracted a bunch of crooks. There are now allegedly something like 750 kinds of cryptocurrencies that are in circulation at different places or globally, 750 of them. I guarantee you that a substantial percentage are being run by nothing but con artists, right? This is a hot topic, and not everybody is moral, and not everybody is honest, and you can make these things disappear. We've got a couple more of these on the same thing. Cryptocurrency exchange, there's one. This is recent now. Cryptocurrency exchange Arbex. Technological issues. Sees complete loss of funds. Scam accusations. That's the headline from Cointelegraph, which is a publication that deals with cryptocurrencies. A series of updates following what Arbex, that's ARBX, described as a technological issue, told investors of its three separate funds that all its capital had gone. All right? Somebody has, he's running three separate funds, separate funds. Now, they're supposed to be separate. He says they're separate, and yet all of the capital from each of the three funds has all disappeared. And he says it's some kind of a technological issue. It's something like a computer glitch, a flash crash that we see on in the Dow Jones from time to time. Well, maybe that's true. But the fact remains, all of their currency has disappeared. Maybe it's just a technological issue, or maybe that's an excuse to take the money and run. But the point is, money disappeared, and let me see where we made an error that effectively meant that we lost the coins after a drive fail and backups were not correct. That's two screw-ups. They had a drive fail, and they also had backups that were not correct. Might be true. Maybe it may be exactly what happened. Do you want to put your currency, your wealth, do you want to store your wealth in a form where if somebody's hard drive fails and their backups were incorrect, all of a sudden you get wiped, your savings get wiped out? All right. Some people are, and according to one user who was involved, used the service, he was involved but not convinced. He called the head, someone not to deal with, and querying whether Arbex was a scam all along. I've probably got one more like this. I don't know if I'm going to be able to find it right now. But the point I'm trying to make is evidence is mounting, and I'm going to bet that it increases in frequency. I am going to bet that however many crooks got into the cryptocurrency business, and it might be 1%, it might be 70%. Not everybody's a crook. I get that. But they're in it as long as the currency, the cryptocurrency, continues to rise in value. At the point in time when they see that this isn't going up anymore, they're going to say sayonara. They're going to take whatever money they can steal and disappear or try to. You can expect to see more criminal charges, more criminal activity as the currency slows in its price increase. If it continues to accelerate, then the crooks will sit on their they'll sit on their nest egg and just watch it get bigger and bigger and bigger. As long as it's getting bigger, they won't bail. But once this thing starts to stabilize, and particularly if it starts to go down prices, my bet is that you will see more crooks come to the fore, and there are going to be more allegations, more court cases, whatever. And the point I'm simply trying to make, You can store your wealth in the form of Bitcoin. And if you are fortunate, you can probably make a lot of money doing that for a while. But you are taking some serious risks. And it can disappear. 850,000 coins at Mt. Gox disappeared in a fraction of a second. Right? It was just gone. And if that's the way you want to store your wealth, that's your business. But you have to recognize you're taking a serious gamble. If you want something you can depend on and you can still find, you need something physical that you can protect and can't be made to disappear by electronic means. All right, Melody, I'm done with my little speech.
You were talking about, you know, the criminals and the biggest cons and so forth. Well, to me, the government is one of the biggest cons in the world, and I still
believe the banking system.
But let me finish my statement, and I do believe cryptocurrencies. It just wasn't created out of some guy that we don't know who it is, and you know, he's his genius. There's so much criminal activity involving cryptocurrencies and so forth. So it's just, you know, that's how I view it. Whether you can make a lot of money or not, I mean, you just need what 1% of someone to sell, and you know, it basically drops out of bed from 80 feet. So I mean, yeah, there's a lot of risk.
They had a story just lately where some guy.
Where there is the opportunity for greater yields, your risk increases.
Yep.
So it's just that simple.
They had a story where some investor spent something like $55 million just in the last month or 6 weeks buying Bitcoin. And based on that $55 million, he actually made something like $283 million, if I understand and recall the story correctly. The market can be moved massively by people who get in with. It's a thin market. And it can be made
but
to go up or down.
The whole point of it is you don't make any money until you sell it.
No, I get that.
So that they
suppose
he sells what he put in there, that market drops.
I think that's my point.
You know,
what goes up comes down, and it goes up and down for pretty much the same reason.
So yeah, you have a lot of people that can put money in there and play with it. I mean, you're talking about So, yeah, a lot of risk, very high risk when it comes to cryptocurrencies. And, again, I still believe it's a government issue, and I don't need to repeat that.
I don't believe it's a government issue. I don't agree on that. There may be some of it that is. I don't know. Some of it might be CIA.
CIA, Mossad, in connection, you know.
Yeah, maybe some.
You know.
Is CIA actually part of the government? Or do people just think it's part of the government? I mean, there's a question. It's like, you know, does the government include the mafia? I don't know. They govern, at least in places, or at least they did.
Well, I don't think they have the ability to. Well, I mean, they might, but
anyway. The whole thing is bizarre.
There was a report out of Reuters yesterday, or actually today, just a couple hours ago, where the credit market is a bigger systemic risk than what it was during 2008 crisis.
In what regard?
And this is the Bank of England. The European corporate bond markets could prove a bigger source of market instability during the next big shock than during the 2008 financial crisis. This was a study done by the Bank of England. The study is the first to try to model how non-bank lenders would react in a stressed market environment. So they're already testing to see what's going to happen. And they have the right numbers to know exactly what they need to do. That's what they're trying to figure out. What is their next, next option to try
and
to keep?
And it's not just an option. It's not like just saying, well, what can we do now? They're trying to say, what can we get away with? How far can we go before they start shooting?
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for right now. Because they are cornered in a way that they can't get out. This is not a question of, well, we need somebody really smart to figure a way to get out of this. There is no way out. Right? The debt is too big, can't be repaid. And we use debt as assets, which means you can't pay the debt, the assets are going to disappear. The debt's too big. You can't pay the debt, and you can't cancel the debt. What are you going to do with the debt? They're going to look for another criminal enterprise, and they're going to say, well, how can we con the people into somehow making this work? But it's not looking for a legitimate escape.
And
it's
what
looking
they're
for
admitting,
a racket.
what the Bank of England is admitting, that they won't be able to absorb any panic selling. You know, like they were able to before. The study found that weekly mutual fund redemptions of 1% of assets under management, and that was the level that was seen during the 2008 crisis, that is going to increase by 40 basis points. So, I mean, they're looking at a fairly severe situation.
And it's real severe.
Yes.
And it's real severe.
So again,
it's worse than probably even people like us imagine.
So if they're doing these types of studies now, when supposedly they have everything under control, it makes it even more frightening.
Yeah, let me tell you another study. Which countries don't have extradition laws with the United States? That will be another study they're conducting right now, just in case we have to move.
And but it also shows you just how fragile. If they're doing these studies to find out what's going to happen, it shows you just how close we are and how fragile the system truly is. It's just not our system, but it's the global system.
Mm-hmm.
They infected the global system, but that was their ultimate goal to begin with. That was the original agenda. Their design. This is all done by design. The longer they can keep it going, the more money they make along the way, and they're not going to give it to you.
Well, they're betting that when the thing goes down, they'll have so much cash of their own that they'll be able to buy everything for next to nothing. So they may have a vested interest in making a crash, or maybe they just got carried away. I don't know, but I don't see any way this can be avoided. There is trouble headed our way. We're also out of time.
It's leveling the world's standards. And that's exactly what they've done. So this
we will be back mañana. Hope you'll all tune in at that time. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.